Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
On RN Drive, time now to retire to the drawing room.
Yes, it's the drawing room. That's what we've decided to call this final conversation that we have on RN Drive leading up to the top of the clock and the end of the program. We retire to the drawing room and I just entertain some guests or let them entertain me. And today on our first official drawing room, although I suppose it's not the first in fact, but you know what I mean. Today, well, we're going to do a bit of this. Mr. Dickens.
Happy birthday to you.
Okay, I know that was terrible, but I just could not resist doing that. It's the birthday of one of the literary gems. Oliver Twist, Great Expectations, A Christmas Carol. Even if you've never read any Charles Dickens, you've no doubt seen a movie adaptation, a television series, a puppet show, a cartoon, something like that. He's one of the world's most famous and beloved writers, and today marks what would have been his 200th birthday. His output's decreased considerably in his old age. All of his 15 novels are still being read, and his stories and characters hold wide appeal across both young and old. And joining me to discuss the enduring legacy of Charles Dickens are two people who know quite a bit about him. Dr. Alan Dilnot is the Senior Adjunct Researcher of 19th Century Literature at Monash University. That's a very specific title.
Yes, I've got adjunctivitis.
That's very, very good. You're also a long-standing member of the Melbourne Dickens Fellowship.
So I am indeed,
there you
yes.
go. And we're joined by Phil Zachariah, who's a performer who's been channeling Dickens in a production of A Christmas Carol, which you've been performing since 2003. Phil, welcome to the program. Isn't it time you found a different role?
Thank you, and thank you for the song. And it's lovely being 200, and I'm about to fall face first into my cake, if somebody would like to catch
me. Is that what he would do?
Probably. I don't know.
Well, I should ask you, Alan. Is that what?
Well, he'd probably emerge from the cake rather yes. than fall into it.
Well said.
Who was Charles Dickens?
Well, he was a guy who started in a very humble way and had hard experiences in boyhood, particularly at the age of 11 or 12. Mm. And some people see that as being the force that motivated him, the period in the blacking factory when he...
So his father goes off to prison.
His father's in the Marshalsea prison, imprisoned for debt, because he was a big spender and not a big earner.
Right.
And there was often a discrepancy between the money that he took in
and putting
the, money,
it very delicately.
And the money that he put out.
Yes.
And so in those days there were debtors' prisons, and the irony of that was that if you were put in prison for debt, you were prevented really from earning any money to pay off.
Right,
the debt.
So you'd never be able to pay it off.
And you might possibly be in prison for the rest of your life. You might be forgotten.
Now, Phil, you'd relate to all this debt talk being an actor, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yes, given that only 3% of actors are working in this country at any given time.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Although, is that because a whole lot of people describe themselves as actors when they can't act?
A little bit of that.
Yeah.
I think it applies to professionals.
Right, okay. But,
you know, you see the same faces on TV over and over again.
That's true.
And they're off working in bars and waiting on tables.
Yeah, it would never happen in the media more generally.
Never, ever at all.
So, Alan, sorry I interrupted you. So his father's in prison for debt.
Yes, that's right. And so Dickens Jr. Is put out to work. His parents have a contact or a relation who owns or manages a blacking factory. That's a place where they made boot polish. Mm. And Charles was sent there at a tender age to pack bottles and to paste on labels and to paste on the to tie on the caps of the bottles. Mm. And he got very good at the work.
It's very stimulating work by the sense of
it. It was a production line, but he felt that he'd been forgotten by his family. He was living in lodgings. He was paid 6 shillings a week, and he had to find money for his food and drink during the week. His rent was paid by other means, but he was really exposed to life at a tender age.
And you think that's his secret? Is that why he became such a great writer?
It's one of his secrets, because he felt that his hopes of growing up to be a great and famous man perished at that time. That was what he was thinking when he was a child. Mm. And so he, his ambition was to recover from that, but he didn't talk about his blacking factory experience for the rest of his life, except possibly to two people. One was his wife, Catherine, and the other was to the man who eventually became his biographer. And that biographer had touched on the subject one day, and Dickens said nothing about it at the time, but then produced an autobiographical fragment which contained his version of what had happened to him at the age of 10.
Oh, wow.
And just to finish off the story, well, there are two important points to make about this period in the blacking factory. One was that he got out of jail. His father got out of jail because his mother, that is Charles Dickens's grandmother, left a legacy. So the fairy godmother waved a wand.
They could pay a debt.
And paid, and so John Dickens, Charles's father, was able to get out of jail. The other point is that, and Charles then expected that he would be able to go back to school, but his mother thought that the family needed the income, so she set herself to heal the rift between Dickens's father and the man who managed the blacking factory.
Right.
And Dickens said of this, "I never have forgotten, I never can forget, I never shall forget, that my mother was warm for my being sent back." And some people believe that his cruel portraits of certain mature age women stem from that experience.
That's interesting. So, Phil, you live in a Dickensian world. I mean, you have to portray Dickens' characters.
Well, yes. I mean, I especially know A Christmas Carol. Of course, that's what I perform. Sure. And, of course, it was the blacking factory experience and Dickens wandering about the streets of London, which he loved to do, and seeing the seamier side of life, which was pretty much in your face then, which led him to write what he did about the problems of society, and he actually affected change because of that. He changed laws. He changed people's thinking. A Christmas Carol comes from his desire to tell employers to say, to look after their employer, to treat people properly, and he... And that was his drive. Yeah, he went down the tin mines in Cornwall, saw the kids working, being enslaved down there, basically. He went into the ragged schools. He spoke on the stage of the Manchester Athenaeum with Benjamin Disraeli, and the book came out of that particular urge to make life better for the working man in England.
So who would he vote for today? You can jump in, Alan, if you want.
Well, I think that's a very difficult one because he had no faith at all in politicians of any
So he wouldn't vote, he'd abstain.
Yes, and in Britain you could abstain if you wanted to. There was no compulsory voting.
And, of course, he was a parliamentary journalist for a while too. So
yes,
he sat there and watched them blather.
Right. I'm just interested because you mentioned Disraeli. Disraeli was the man who expanded the franchise to the working class.
He did, yes.
And I'm just wondering if maybe there was something in that.
Disraeli was a Tory, but he believed in making an alliance between the ruling class and the masses to cut out the Whigs who were in the middle.
That was
his hope. Also, he was a novelist. Disraeli was a very gifted novelist. And
Do you think Julia Gillard's a gifted novelist?
Well, I haven't yet seen any of her works.
She's novel. How would you play a character written by Julia Gillard?
In private.
I was not expecting that. Well done, very well done. So, I mean, you've described sort of that gritty world from which Dickens emerges. And he writes about a gritty world. I mean, that term Dickensian is often used to describe, that poverty-stricken social environment. Also one that's filled with laughter, though.
And I'm not sure where Dickens stands overall in the literature of the world, but I'm pretty sure that he's number one as a comic writer.
All right.
All sorts of comedy, humour, whimsy, satire, parody, pretty well every kind of comedy that you can think of.
Well, to be that, you have to be a remarkable observer of human behaviour, don't you?
You do.
Every comic genius is that.
Yeah, and from his earliest writings, he's keen to puncture pomposity and pretentiousness, the gap between what people claim for themselves and what they actually are.
Yeah, right.
Which may, in fact, make him liable himself to the accusation of being a hypocrite, which I have heard.
It wouldn't be the first.
No, he wouldn't be
so,
the first.
So, but how does Charles Dickens go about writing a character? And you'll see where I'm going with this, having an actor in the room.
Yes.
How does he go about writing that character?
I think he imagines himself into the role. There's a story told of one of his daughters being sick and lying in the room while Dickens was at work on one of his novels. And suddenly Dickens jumped up from his desk and went over to the mirror and practiced faces and mannerisms in the mirror. And then he rushed back to his desk and scribbled away furiously and then got up and looked in the mirror again. So it's almost as if he's trying out the role as if he were on stage.
So he's writing a play, essentially.
In a way. And that's why, as Phil would agree, I think, that's why his works go so readily onto the stage and onto film, because they are, as John Ruskin said, they're created within a circle of stage fire.
Right.
Beautiful phrase.
They're conceived in the theatre.
Yeah. I find it really interesting that the looking in the mirror is something that cartoonists do as well when they're drawing their characters.
Right.
So you can draw what parallels you like there.
Well, are his characters cartoon characters?
Not cartoon. They're both bigger than life and realistic at the same time. And if you look at almost anybody performing Dickens' characters, there's something quite identifiable about them as a Dickens character. And you can see that they come from Dickens. They have that sense, that smell about them, that mannerism that encourages people to go big but not gross, not grotesque.
It's funny, I'm thinking of, I mean, The Artful Dodger strikes me as a good example of that sort of thing. Clearly a larger-than-life character. But you're right, not grotesque, not ridiculous.
You could actually meet that person.
Yeah, they just have a lot of personality.
Yeah.
Well, I think what Dickens quite often does is have a very good idea, a single tray for a character, and he makes that their signature tune, but then he elaborates on that and puts in some depth. And you know, when we're walking around meeting other people for the first time, all we can know about them really is what they say and what they do. And that's why Dickens is accused of dwelling on externals, that he doesn't talk about the mental life of characters. But in fact, we work out when we're with other people what it is that they're thinking from what they say and what they're doing. But then everybody's a mystery too, so we're never quite sure that we've got it right. And I think that's one of the strengths of Dickens, that they come across as if we're meeting them in real life.
Yeah. Phil,
yes,
as an actor playing a Dickensian character, do you see, that we're talking about before, standing in front of the mirror, actually, what's the word, bringing these characters into physical existence before he puts them on the page?
I like to do mirror work myself.
Yes. Yeah, so
as an actor.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And occasionally I'll forget, and after quite some time I'll come back to the mirror to see what the character looks like.
Yeah, right.
And I remember the very first rehearsal for A Christmas Carol, Scrooge was just there. I don't know where he came from. He was just, I spoke the words and suddenly I was doing things. And it really was just a little bit spooky.
Yeah, right.
Because that's the nature of the characters. They're there in the words. It's almost as though somehow the words have an embedded program.
So would you say, I mean, I imagine as an actor you've played more than just Dickens' characters.
Yeah.
Would you say his characters are better realised than other, like, do you relish playing a Dickens character because you know that it's going to be easier to work
with? It's going to be rich. You can do things with it. You can do a great many things with it.
Mm.
But as opposed to, say, a Shakespearean character, where you seem to have a lot more freedom to play with it, to decide whether, you know, what the characteristics are of that character. There's more of it given to you by Dickens, but it doesn't restrict you. It's like a Mandelbrot. You just go deeper and deeper, and there's more and more detail. And in 8 years of performing this show, performing A Christmas Carol, I have not grown tired. I have not reached the bottom. Every year we find new things, and they just become richer and more involved.
Do you play the character differently each time?
Yes, let's say marginally. It may not be obvious from the outside, but there's always something a little different going on. And especially there was especially when you I'm in the middle of a dialogue between two people. On Christmas Eve, when Scrooge says to Bob Cratchit, "You'll be wanting all day tomorrow, I suppose."
It's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. It's back and forth. And it's like having dishes of wonderful food in front of you. You know, you have a bite of this and you have a bite of that.
There's a smorgasbord.
Heavens, yes.
Yes. 3 minutes to the top of the clock here on RN Drive, which means we're really running out of time. The show is nearly over. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but you're listening to Dr. Alan Dilnot, who's the senior adjunct researcher of 19th century literature at Monash University, and Phil Zachariah, an actor who's been performing the Eagle Nest Theatre's production of A Christmas Carol since 2003. Just in the very limited time we have left, I'm just interested to know, were either of you Dickens fans from the moment you were born? Did you discover him late in life? How did it work?
I heard some of the stories. They were read to me in children's versions, but I didn't read any of them for myself until I was probably 20, 21. As soon as I did read Dombey and Son, I think it was, from the first line of that, I was hooked.
How do you get hooked by first line?
It's so powerful, and and the first paragraph certainly sealed my fate as a...
Was every paragraph that good, or you just happened to stumble across a really good one?
Eventually. You know, true Dickensians won't admit that there's any weakness at all in Dickens.
I remember being staggered by the first paragraph, which is also the first sentence of Oliver Twist, when I was a kid, and thinking, how do you write a sentence that long, and how do you make it make sense the way he does?
And make it readable.
Yes, my mother was a huge Dickens fan.
So were you exposed to Dickens as a kid?
Yes, not enormously, but yes. And it was my mother that was a huge fan and took my brother and me to see Emlyn Williams perform the Dickens readings.
Well, I think you'd be guilty of overexposure to Dickens now as someone living with a Christmas Carol.
You can't
Carol.
Have too much, you know.
Well, all right.
Read more.
The word of the fanatic, the last word of the fanatic. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in. It's been great to go back and think about this extraordinary literature and get your insights on it.
Yeah, thank you kindly.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
That's joy. Dr. Alan Dilnot, a senior adjunct researcher of 19th century literature at Monash University, formerly associate, or still associate, I think, with the Melbourne Dickens Fellowship. And he also edits the monthly newspaper there. Well, there you go. Phil Zachariah, an actor who's been performing the Eagle's Nest Theatre's production of A Christmas Carol since 2003. That's our drawing room conversation on RN Drive today. If you're a Dickens fan or you simply want to find out more about Charles, then you can head to abc.net.au/radionational, where you'll find a raft of features about and documentaries about the great man. And later tonight we have an episode 2 of Great Expectations on the book reading at 11 o'clock. Coming up next is Big Ideas. Today the program asks, what is Vladimir Putin's relationship with the West, and where does his descent into authoritarianism lead Russia? That's going to be a brief conversation. I can imagine a lot to plumb there. That's coming up next on Big Ideas. Waleed Ali finishing up RN Drive. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.